Hi, everyone. This is John Frank, Editorial Director of PL Buyer, welcoming you to the latest PL Buyer podcast. This podcast is the first in a series we're doing with Patrick Rodmel, President and CEO of Watt International, a Toronto-based integrated retail agency with more than 40 years of experience in more than 40 countries. Patrick also is a guest columnist with PL Buyer and will be co-anchoring our new Best of Design Excellence Awards later this year, recognizing the best in private label package design. Today we'll be discussing Patrick's 10 keys to private brand success, the topic of the columns he's been writing for PL Buyer this year. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here, John.
Great to have you. Let's begin by setting the scene for our discussion. Give us the thinking that led to your 10 keys. What can our readers and our listeners here learn from them?
Well, I guess, first of all, turning back the clock, this is really kind of an exercise that's 30 years in the making, John. We, as a business that's been working in private brand and private label development for a long time, we've really seen, if you will, the good, the bad, and the ugly that's happened throughout our industry, and also the many different ways that retailers can approach their private label programs, all the way from shooting from the hip and using more intuition and as decision making, to what some might call analysis paralysis. So I guess if you said where did all this come from, it's from seeing it done many different ways and maybe putting some framework around a ways that people can start looking at their programs in a more strategic way.
That's great. So our readers can profit from your experience, your decades of experience here.
Well, I hope so. And really, John, I think the message I'd love to leave with people is that there really isn't one right way to do this. This is more about setting a framework for thinking. And, so if you're looking for the holy grail that tells you this is the way to do it for your business, every business is different. And as we know, retail is an evolution. So picking up from where you are, there's many different ways to approach and really maximize the power of private label. The question is, are you looking at things the right way and are you asking the right questions? And that's what I hope to do through the 10 keys here.
Great. Well, let's move on to key number one. Your key number one is strategic brand positioning. That sounds very broad and also very important. Can you focus us in a little bit on what you mean by that and where you begin with that?
Yeah, I guess, it's funny. If I had to think of it, it all comes down to that the great Lewis Carroll quote that is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there.
How true is
that? That overall, strategic brand positioning helps define that roadmap for success. And, taking a step back and understanding and really thinking of your private label programs as strategic assets for the business and understanding, if you will, how, if you thought of it that your private label is kind of an actor in a movie or an actress in a movie and you say, what role do I want this actor or actress to play in the overall movie? So the retail brand is the movie and the actors are the private label. That's kind of why it's so important to define the role in the first place of what they're going to do for the overall business. It helps to make a lot of decisions down the road.
So no improv here. They have to know what the role is so that they can play that role.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, you know what? It's really, if you look back on the history of private label and our evolution to the place it's taken in the hearts and minds of consumers, the number one historic obstacle and still facing many retailers is the trust in the quality. Getting someone to believe in the brand and pick it off the shelf. Once you've got someone to buy into the product on the first time, take it off the shelf and say, yeah, I'm going to put this in my basket. Of course, then it's up to the quality of the product, which we'll talk about as another key, but with quality management. But the number one rule is to get it off the shelf and in the shopping basket, and effective brand positioning and packaging will overcome any of those obstacles.
Okay. Yes, the quality management discussion will be our next podcast, so we'll giving our listeners something to look forward to. Let's talk about, you mentioned in the column you wrote on this, you mentioned common strategic branding issues, and I believe you listed four there. Can you go through those, talk a bit about those?
Sure. It's interesting that the most profound one is often the most simple and the one that doesn't get the attention that it deserves, and that's on the naming. So that is to say, the first question we often get asked is, should we put the name of our store on our private label program? Should the name of the retailer appear on the overall program? And again, I hate to say that, you know, I'd love to hand over the Holy Grail, but there really isn't one right answer there. Mm-hmm. It all has to do with where you see that brand, whether it's based on quality tiering, is it a premium or a national brand equivalent or a value tier? Is it a category brand that speaks to a specific category of products, either based on nutritional elements like organic and natural, or based on lifestyle things like kids or ethnic brands or things of that nature? So the naming is one that I find that, you know, doesn't get enough attention in the rigor of the understanding of what the wrong decision can mean relative to for your overall program. Put your name on the wrong program, and you can actually have negative equity no matter how good the quality of the products are. So there's some issues around that.
So retailers really have to think about that. I mean, I would think the knee-jerk reaction is just to put the store's name on it and...
Well, you know, it's interesting when you look back on history. One of course, the most gold standard private brands is President's Choice, and it doesn't have the name of the retail brand or Loblaws on it.
Very true.
There were a number of different factors that went into that, but of course, one thing that enabled the Loblaws companies to do is to take that brand and seamlessly translate it to other banners within the overall network. So. Mm-hmm. Going into a Zayre's or a No Frills, the President's Choice brand can seamlessly go into those different businesses. Now, if it's at Loblaws, you'd have a harder time doing that. So there's some very pragmatic issues around the naming, and there's also the more emotional or consumer-centric thought process around what is the brand that's going to make the most sense to the consumer. Is it the name of the business, or is it something else?
Okay.
So it is a pretty very important decision relative to private label.
Okay.
The other one, there's three other there, John, just quickly. You know, quality tiering or category branding, you know, people saying, you know, should I have a good, better, best program? Where do I put my organics? Should it belong in my premium tier, my national brand equivalent? All that kind of labyrinth of decision-making by quality and by category is one of the more sort of broad issues that gets addressed. And something I always like to point out to our clients is that, you know, two of the great retailers of private brands in the kind of the mass and grocery sector would be Loblaws and Target.
Mm-hmm.
And many people always refer to them as businesses that they admire for their private label. Well, they are two of the very few retailers who only essentially have a two-quality tiering system, a better program and a best, where most retailers have three. So you can even see there that all the way down to how many tiers of quality products should I have is also something that has to be considered in the overall overall decision-making.
Okay.
You know, design systems, there's a lot of work towards systematic design, which I think the pendulum swung a little too far that way these days, John, where retailers are trying to find the economies and the shelf visibility by having their programs almost go back to the days of having generic-looking programs. And I think we're losing some of that personality that made the products compelling. You know, we're sort of systematic and consistency in the face of what's going to sell in this category to this consumer. And then one that I just alluded to a little earlier, which is those specialty categories. You know, the billion-dollar question we're asked a lot is, where should organic fit? Should I have my name on it, and is it a premium tier, and things like that. So those specialty categories, those are kind of the four areas that we see as far as the strategic brand that kind of percolate to the top.
Okay. And what are some of the pitfalls in strategic brand positioning here? What should retailers be wary of?
Well, you know, one of the real kind of stop sign rules that we talk a lot about is think long and hard before you put your name on a value tier. You know, is that idea of for naming of programs, it's only if you're a discount retailer should you really be thinking of applying your name to the program. Otherwise, finding other ways to build the loyalty and exclusivity without putting your name on it is probably the way to go. It's important to remember that consumers don't really think about how little they paid for something if the quality doesn't meet their expectations. You know, so if the quality's not there and the retailer's name is on the package, the result is that pretty significant negative equity for the entire store, not for that that one product. Does that make some sense?
Yes. I mean, consumers, as you say, no matter what they spend, they don't want to bring something home and say, boy, this isn't very good.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if it's a discount retailer and it's on there, you might get a little more forgiveness, but that's why we always like to say for a what I'll call a mainstream or someone trying to aspire to a higher quality perception within their business, be very careful before you start slapping your name on your value tier. So that's something that really kind of jumps out at us.
How would you define the roles of the different tiers? What should a retailer be considering with this, whether they go two tiers or three tiers?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. You know, the outside of the physical store, we see the private label programs as the most significant asset for businesses, largely because it's what, you know, as we referred to earlier, it's what the customer takes home. You know, the advertising or billboard for a business is the private label that sits in the cupboard or on the shelf of someone's home. Mm-hmm. So they really do have very specific goals. You know, strategically, a value tier is used to help manage a price perception, and that's why we often talk about, you know, in promotion, you want to drive a lot of your value tier if you want to drive a value message for the business. But that being said, you've got a mid-tier or a national brand equivalent, as a lot of people call it, and that's really driving that whole compare and save message, you know, like equal to the national brand, but we can save you a few cents more. And then, of course, there's that upper tier or premium tier that's all about delivering a quality message. So you really want the good stuff. Here's the brand that delivers. Mm-hmm. The real key is dialing up or dialing down each one of those based on market conditions, you know, and the marketing calendar for the business. So each has a very specific strategic role within the business that needs to be managed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what's the role of packaging in all this? You mentioned briefly a minute ago packaging. What's the role of packaging in brand positioning?
Well, you know, it's going full circle back. The whole role of packaging is to get somebody to buy it once, right? Mm-hmm. If you know to deliver the right message, whether it's value or quality or unique or appetite appeal, whatever it is to get that product bought once off the shelf. But when you put private label programs together, the key for us is, can you distinguish the value proposition of each tier? So it can be, in fact, somewhat of a subjective exercise. We always encourage getting, you know, shopper and consumer feedback. But, you know, if you took the good, better, best and put them on a table and brought someone in from another country who'd never seen them before, do you think they could accurately define this one's for value, this is the middle, and this is the premium? And that's what packaging can do, is to say really distinguish the value proposition of each one of those tiers.
That would be an amazing exercise to take someone who didn't speak the language and just let them look at it and determine by the package dressing, the design, etc. Fascinating to see how many would get it the way the retailers thought they had positioned it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, John, we actually, a lot of the research we do involves people that aren't familiar with the marketplace. Certainly, I'm not talking about, you know, profoundly different cultures, because then you've got into some variances there. Mm-hmm. But isn't it great to get someone's insight on a company that they have no idea what it's about? That way you're not having that historic or clouded perception of either marketing messages or the market. You really get that pure insight on what someone sees in the private label program, and in fact, in a retail experience overall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it my imagination, or are more and more private label packages becoming white? It seems like everyone is turning to white now. Why is that? And I would guess you'd advise against doing that, again, as a simple solution to packaging.
Well, John, it's a tough trend to go against these days. You know, the overall white as packaging connotates a more healthy position, generally speaking. You know, throughout time, there's obviously the ebbs and flows of trends, but, you know, black packaging connotates a premium experience. White generally does a healthy and a value perception for the package. So right now, with the state of our overall economy here, you know, there's a pretty compelling argument to go that way. What ends up happening, though, is that once you get saturation in the market and lots of people are using it, you start to get that confusion and lack of differentiation. So I think it has its place still, but over time we're going to see some movement back to, I think it's more a question of again, that whole systematic versus being category relevant, you know. We see what Walmart's doing in trying to evolve the Great Value, which was a white program, mm-hmm. into having a little more category relevancy. And I think that, you know, the tides will continue to shift towards having a little more meaningful differentiation. But white's still got some legs in it, John.
Okay. And is there a new white out there? Or is, you know, you said white still has legs, so we'll still be seeing more white?
I think so. You know, I think that, you know, we've done some pretty interesting and got some pretty interesting insights on color studies. And it's not so much a question of a color as much as palettes of color. You know, in tougher economic times, people prefer to have more muted colors that reflect kind of a more, I'll call it a sympathetic tone of the economy, as opposed to really bright, punchy, powerful ones, which more signify and drive a more, when the economy is doing better and we're in a sort of a more, I'll call it an aggressive mood. So it's more about the palette than the actual colors themselves. But now I'm getting into some design trade secrets, John. I think I should cap it off
so
here.
I think we're coming to the end of our discussion.
Good.
We'll let our listeners call you and talk to you directly or hire your firm to get into those down the road a bit.
Always appreciate the plug, John.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Patrick, for joining us today. That's all the time we have. And let me thank you again and thank our listeners and invite them to listen to all of our PL Buyer podcasts with Patrick and other industry leaders by visiting our website, PrivateLabelBuyer.com, where you can listen to and download these podcasts. We'll be doing podcasts on each of Patrick's columns, so please be sure to come to our website and listen to all of those as they are posted there. Thanks very much, everyone, and goodbye.